coming in as Loeb. Milledyke centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You guys put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going on this Wednesday, April 9th. Another hour of Flames Talk is underway with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg as we welcome you to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts on this Wednesday. Text lines open this hour if you're listening live on Sportsnet 960, The Fan at 960-960. Lots to get to this hour, and let's kick it off on Wednesdays, like we try to do every Wednesday. Our friend Megan Mickelson joins the program. Now the color voice of the Calgary Flames. 77 down, 5 to go this regular season. Let's say hello to Wes Gilbertson. Hello, Wes.
Hello, buddy.
And let's also say hello to Mick. Hello, friend.
Oh, hi there.
How we doing?
Doing good. I just had my pregame nap, so I'm buzzing. I'm ready to go.
She's dialed. I wanted to maybe start with this theme or this topic because, you know, the Flames are getting set to take on the Ducks, and it's another game that feels like a must win. They just played the Sharks, and that felt like a must win. And before that, the Vegas game. And it feels like for a few weeks now, at least the last week or so, the Flames have been talking like that. Like, hey, the games have all the stakes, and the implications of not getting a point or two out of games right now feel that much more heavy because of the deficit they have to make up to the Minnesota Wild and how they don't control their own destiny at this point. So, putting yourself in your playing skates again, Mick, like playing all these pressure-packed games in succession, What's that like as a player mentally? Like when every game feels like the stakes are so high, what is that like for a player as they go through their process?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say that, you know, the games that where the pressure and the stakes are the highest, like, and I can only speak for myself, I guess. I can't speak for any other player. I think every player is different in just how they process that pressure and stress and how you kind of internalize it. And if it's something that you live for and you thrive off of, but for me, like I loved it, you know, the higher the stakes, the higher the pressure, the more fun it was. And, you know, I would say that that's, you know, the majority of players that I played with felt the same way because, you know, the players that make it to the highest level and stay at the highest level are often the ones that like have the most competitive drive. And so playing in games where, you know, every play matters, every shift matters. Those always were the fun ones for me. Like I think back to, you know, playing the Americans and any games that we played against them and especially gold medal games at Olympics or World Championships. And it's like, you live for those. And I always felt like they didn't come up often enough for us. You know, with the national team, there was one World Championships every year, an Olympics every 4 years, and you only play the Americans a handful of times every year. But, you know, I wish that I was able to play in more games like that. So, you know, I would think that it's something that, you know, as a player that you live for and you really thrive off of. So if I were a player right now for the Flames, I would be in heaven just because like the pressure is high. I honestly, at this point in the season, yes, would you rather be, you know, have a playoff spot locked in and kind of be cruising until the end of the season? Sure. But those games are hard to play in too, just because, you know, the stakes and the pressure, it's not high. Or, you know, on the other end of it, if you're completely out of the playoffs, those games are not fun to play in either. So, I mean, if you're a player on this team right now, you're like, I'd be having an absolute blast. Is it hard? Is it exhausting? Yes. But when you come out with a win in games where the pressure's that high, it is extremely rewarding.
Mick, given everything you just said, I'm curious, because I know that the Flames are treating this stretch run as a really valuable evaluation tool as well. Like, you kind of find out, you have a bunch of players on your roster who haven't been in a ton of big moments at the highest level, and so you're trying to figure out, okay, who is going to rise to that challenge? Are there one or two players that in these sort of must-win moments have kind of jumped out at you?
Well, obviously Nazem Kadri has been a guy, you know, and it's, I think we've always seen his competitive motor and his drive, but it's also, you can have that drive, but your ability to come up big and to perform and to be clutch in the high pressure situations, that's a whole other skill and a completely different story. So he's really jumped off the page at me, just as an older player who knows what it takes and who thrives under that pressure. I would say Mackenzie Weegar has been one for me on the back end. He had a couple of turnovers last game against the Sharks that weren't too pretty, but overall, like, his stat line night after night is just absolutely monstrous and is playing really, really big minutes. I'd have to say Joel Hanley as well. So maybe it's that pairing in general. I think that they both really, you know, the harder the games are, the better that those two play together. And then one young guy, and I think that this will come to no surprise to anyone, that, you know, has really impressed me with just his ability to handle all of the pressures, Dustin Wolf. And I think that's another, you know, thing to kind of, you know, think about and understand, you know, in this situation, and is just how valuable playing in these games is for the young players. And I know that we've talked about it, because, you know, figuring out how you perform under that pressure, that's something that it does take some time. Like, it doesn't come to you right away as a young player, but it just seems like Dustin Wolf he's just kind of slid right into being able to perform. Mm-hmm. And I would say he's probably under the most pressure out of all the players, like, and he's been absolutely excellent. And, you know, maybe that has to do with his history and how he's had to, you know, prove himself at every level. So he knows how he needs to perform in those situations. But yeah, if I had to pinpoint a couple of guys, I think, you know, those would be probably the big ones for me.
Mick, it's we're chatting with Megan Mickelson, color voice of the Flames here on Flames Talk. You talk about the pressure, and we talk about how every game means so much right now, and the stakes of losing specifically feels so high right now. Could that be a reason why it feels like routinely here over the last couple of weeks they have not gotten to their game early and they've had poor starts? I mean, we know what happened in San Jose. We know what happened in Vegas. We know what happened in Utah. We know what happened in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been a bit of a theme here over the last couple of weeks that poor starts have really impacted their games, and all the credit to them. Their belief and resilience has allowed them to come back and get points or a single point in a lot of those games. But could that have, like, could there be any parallel to how much the games mean right now to why this team is having a hard time starting the way they want?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the big things for me is that you get away from your game when you're trying to do too much often. And so I think my theory would be, you know, at the start of games, I think that they're trying to do a little bit too much. Like, it's almost like they're trying too hard. So, you know, to have good starts, and I think for this group and just the way that they play and their identity, you know, I think tonight what will be key is just, like, simplify your game off the start. Because, like, when you think about, like, the way that they need to play to be successful, it's a really simple game. Like, it's a hardworking game, but, you know, it's getting pucks out of your zone, pucks in deep and behind their defensemen, establishing your forecheck, you know, the movement of all five guys in the offensive zone, and then generating their offense from there. And, it's a simple game, but, you know, it's not, you know, beating guys one-on-one at your own blue line, or trying to force things off the rush, or force passes, seam passes through guys. in the offensive zone, cheating on offense or getting caught, you know, too far down low when you're forechecking. It's a very, like, simple, structured game. So I think from what I've seen anyways, they've gotten away from that early on in games. And I spoke with Dan Lambert this morning and I asked him, you know, what are the elements of your game that you need to have a strong start? Because you talk about it and you try to address it. And he agreed and said the same thing, like that you just need to kind of keep it simple off the start, get to your game, get into a rhythm, and then you kind of go from there. But I think, you know, for me, it's just, you can tell how badly this team wants to win. So I think that they're, you know, maybe trying a little bit too hard off the start and complicating their game. So I think simplifying would go a long way.
Mick, Pat and I have spent a lot of time over the past couple days talking about Zane Parekh.
Yeah, just a little bit.
And understandably so. Before we repeat ourselves, you know, where do you come down on the should he play right away? Is this the right approach? Where do you come down on how the Flames plan to, I guess, ease Zane Parekh into the NHL?
Well, as long as the Flames are making a push for the playoffs, and I'm being honest, and that could be one more game or two more games, like we don't know, my answer is that they should not put him in the lineup. And I was pretty adamant about that. It was a couple games ago, Wilsey asked me in the middle of the broadcast what I think, if I think he should play, if they brought him in. And I said, if they're making a push for the playoffs, still no. I think, you know, obviously he's a phenomenal player. Like the numbers that he's put up this season and what he's done, you know, that's for sure. And does he have an elite level of skill, a tremendous amount of talent? Could he be a massive piece for this organization in the future down the road? Absolutely. But I just don't think that, you know, based on what we saw in the preseason, and maybe it's just because I haven't had eyes on him all season long. The only eyes I've had on him are this morning at morning skate. But I would say that, you know, if you're really competing to win right now, I just think that it would be a little bit too risky to put him into a game. I also don't know that it's fair to, you know, the guys on the back end and the six that are playing right now they're playing well. So I just think it would be tough to put him into, say, if they put him in the lineup tonight, that would have been extremely shocking to me. But, you know, if they're eliminated, if, you know, things are not looking good, then I think it's a good time to give him some experience. And, you know, hearing him, even, you know, seeing him talk yesterday, the media availability at the hotel yesterday morning, and just like how excited he was. You know, I think he's excited to be here and eager to kind of do whatever he needs to do. But, you know, I think it's tough to say because none of us have seen him play, and you can't really compare his play in the OHL to playing at the NHL level. I don't know if that makes sense, but Dan did tell me this morning, and I asked him about Zane. I said, is there any differences that you see from when you saw him at the start of the season, preseason, to now? And he said he does look stronger and more mature. So that was interesting to hear because he's seen him more. He's spent more time with them as well. And I mean, I thought he looked really, really good this morning. They had him, he was the placeholder on the second power play unit for Rasmus Anderson at morning skate today. And I mean, you can tell just the way he passes the puck. He's confident with the plays that we know he's a confident guy, but he's confident in the plays that he makes. He was executing really well. He moves so well laterally across the blue line. So it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see if and when he does get in, just kind of where his game is from a physical standpoint and how he is defending as well. It's a bit of a long answer to a very simple question, but I hope that all made sense.
Is it like, Wes, I don't know if it says to that point, like it doesn't feel like a simple debate in Flames land right now, right?
Well, no, it doesn't. And I keep putting it the same way. Like the clamoring to see him tonight and to see him Friday, I realize that it's all a compliment, and I think it's, you know, I'm sure there's some excitement inside those walls at the Saddledome. Like, this is the sort of prospect that they have not had many of over the years. And yet, Mick, you raise a really good point for me, and that's, I mean, you always raise good points, but I'm just going to single out one specifically.
No, thanks, Wes.
She's a point machine.
She is, yeah. Much higher than point per segment, which is kind of where we fit in. It's not like we're talking about a guy who tore it up in preseason and you kind of looked and said, okay, we want you to go back to junior, but, you know, look what you've already done against pros. It was really the opposite with Zane Parekh. He left humbled, in his own words. He left, you know, with his confidence certainly having taken a hit, just seeing what guys like Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson could do. He referenced that exhibition game he played against the Canucks. And so, hey, 107 points in junior certainly has a way of making people, myself included, forget that part. But to, you know, bring him in, throw him into an NHL game where every mistake is magnified the way it is in a playoff chase, I don't know that it's the right thing even for the kid, and I don't think it's the right thing for the team. Now, if they're eliminated, then it's a total different discussion. Not only play them, but play them on the power play, give them a healthy amount of minutes, all that stuff. I do understand why Ryan Huska wants to pump the brakes a little.
Look, I mean, I get it too. I really do. And I mean, I keep saying, like, if I were making the calls, I'm like, sure, I'd put him in. Like, why not? Because I think that it would be awesome to see, and maybe he could infuse something to this offense, into a struggling power play, and all those types of things. And I can make a, I don't know, somewhat convincing argument. But as I've said, Mick, like, okay, my opinion, it doesn't have any consequences, right? Like, I could say, like, hey, you know what? I'd play just the four defensemen, and I wouldn't even play two of, like, I could say, let's, you know what? I think they should scratch Huberto tonight because I didn't like the way he played. Like, I can make all these points, or I could have all these opinions. They don't have any consequences. But for Ryan Huska, him putting in a guy with zero NHL experience who, to Wes's point, was overwhelmed, like significantly overwhelmed in his first NHL training camp. And yes, that was months ago, but it wasn't, it's not even a full season ago. Like, that's a tough spot for a head coach to be in, especially when his team still has legitimate playoff life. And going back to our first topic, every game has the stakes that they do on them right now. Like, I don't know if I had actual consequences to my decision making in terms of how my team was going to perform and how something might impact a win or a loss. I don't know if I'd have the ability to do it either. This guy has never played in the NHL. I know everybody keeps talking about Cale Makar in 2019. Cale Makar is the best defenseman of a generation and was also a year and a half older than Parekh is right now, and had also been playing against 22 and 23-year-olds over his time at college. I feel like it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, so I want to see Parekh play.
No.
I do, but I get why he's not. I really, really do.
Well, and honestly, guys, like, I think that if I were a player on this team and Zane Parekh came in and you're fighting for your playoff lives and you put him into the lineup, to me, it's kind of disrespectful to the rest of the team. Like, I would take it as a bit of a slap to the face. In that, you know, we've worked our tails off, and you're going to put a guy in the lineup that, you know, like we said, was overwhelmed in the preseason when we're all still, you know, just absolutely grinding away right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that it would go over very well in the dressing room. And that's just me as a player. Like, I'm putting myself in the shoes of me if I were sitting in that dressing room. And then, you know, I think the other thing that we have to think about is he is such a highly touted prospect. And like Pat, you mentioned, the Flames haven't had a guy like this in a really long time. So you do not want to mess up his development. And, you know, there's always talk about defensemen and are they ready and what's right for them and, you know, keeping them in the American League for a little bit longer. I'm not saying he needs to go to the American League.
Right.
I'm just saying that you want to be careful. So is throwing him into the fire right now, is that what is best for him, you know, next season or even 2 to 3 years down the road? You know, and I would think that that's definitely something that they have in the back of their minds as well.
Well, he's not going to play Wednesday against Anaheim, and I don't think he's going to play Friday against Minnesota either, because regardless of the results in both Minnesota and Calgary's game on Wednesday night, Friday's game will mean something to the Flames. It's guaranteed that Calgary will be playing for something on home ice against the Wild. Now, how close they are remains to be seen with a couple of results, but Calgary will be playing for something. And so I don't think Parekh will be playing on Friday night at the Dome either. From there, perhaps all bets are off. But, yeah, I think that we're all kind of on the same page on that one. For now, Mick, I'm glad the pregame nap was a 10 out of 10. We will talk to you shortly. And enjoy the game, friend.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You as well. Megan Mickelson is the color voice of the Flames. She joins us Wednesdays here on Flames Talk, and she joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Say hello now to our Pacific Division insider. Let's say hello to Jonathan Davis of NHL Network and Beeson Sports. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Hello, JD.
Hey, Pat. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Hey, this Pacific Division is looking like it's going to come right down to the wire. Now, it looks a little less like that. With the way Vegas has been able to respond after losing a couple, but it does feel like there's still lots to determine when it comes to the top three in the Pacific Division. Let's maybe start with the Vegas Golden Knights, a group that has a 6-point edge on the LA Kings for top spot with one more game played. What do the Vegas Golden Knights look like as they head down the stretch here?
Well, actually, I'd like to start with the breaking news that Chris Johnstone was just reported.
Oh, I look at that. Chris Johnstone reports that Connor McDavid will return to the lineup. That I was not expecting that. That just came down the pipe. Well, let's start there. McDavid returns for the Oilers against the Blues on Wednesday night.
Yeah, that's going to mess. I bet the Blues tonight, you know, just because Connor or Leon was playing. But this is, yeah, I mean, it's significant. You know, we've been waiting for this to happen. When Edmonton was in town here over the weekend in Los Angeles and Anaheim, I mean, you know, Connor was on the road trip. He, you know, had skated the Saturday afternoon game against Los Angeles. You know, he and Leon, I was told by our, good friend of ours that both those guys were riding the bike and looked very good. I mean, it's just riding a bike, but, you know, their movements indicated that whatever injuries they may have been dealing with, they seem to be heading in the right direction. So, you know, I always felt that Leon would come back maybe, I think it's Friday against San Jose. But yeah, the Connor timetable, look, I'm surprised it's this long. I think Connor probably found the skates, you know, his skates that the team had been hiding for quite some time, at least the ones he likes to use in games. So, no, it's significant. You know, he got himself the break. You know, he got himself a break that, although he did not want, it was probably very good for him. And, you know, this Oilers team, watching them play without Connor and Leon, they're very ordinary. So, you know, gives him, what, about 4 or 5 games to get himself, you know, into game shape. And a good step for the Oilers here.
Well, I had seen the projected lines without Connor And you're like, oh my gosh. Like, it looked like, it reminded me of the days of Leonard Petrell and Linus Omark. And you're like, oh my God. Like, this is, that's how, because they didn't have Ekholm in that lineup. They didn't have Klingberg, Drysdale. Nuge is sick, so he won't play against the Blues. And no Connor. Like, you took a look at that Oilers lineup, you're like, Adam Henrique is the 1C. It's like Magnus Pjärvi. You're like, this is Sam Gagne as a rookie. Like, you're like, this is not a good throwback.
Yeah, not at all.
Mark Fain.
So there's the big news right now for out of the division, and look, Edmonton. I've had the impression that they're not concerned where finishing second isn't important to them. Getting healthy is. So, if both can still happen, I mean, look, we saw what happened with LA. LA loses to Seattle, but they're still in a good spot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe we'll work our way up then, because the Oilers have fallen behind the LA Kings for that number two spot in the Pacific Division. It feels like the Kings, who have been the best home ice team in the NHL this year, it feels like the Kings are in the driver's seat to drive home the number two seed and thus host game one and two against Edmonton as they meet, are almost certainly to meet for a fourth straight year.
Yeah, I mean, because LA losing, the way Vegas has gone, this week, and LA losing that game, to Seattle, it pretty, that really takes them out of, of finishing, it takes them out of any design to first place in the Pacific. So, look, LA, even in that, in that Seattle game, I think LA kind of felt like, hey, we're locked into second. That game against Seattle, there was two noticeable absences from the Kings back end. They rested Drew Doughty, who's, came back from the fractured ankle. Mm-hmm. And he has talked about the fact that he's going to have to deal with pain, the rest of the way. He mentioned that pretty much when he came back. So, Drew missing, getting some rest in a game against Seattle, not a big deal. And then Joel Edmondson didn't play. And that was the first game that he's missed. And that's pretty substantial for a guy that, doesn't normally play much more than 60 games in an NHL season because he just can't stay healthy. He has stayed healthy. And, this is a year where Joel Edmondson, I think I may have mentioned this to you before, Pat, but he's averaging more minutes than Anze Kopitar this year. I did not have that on my bingo card. We all laughed at the signing, and more not because it was Edmondson, but the term of the deal. I mean, he got 4 years. He got paid, a couple million dollars a year. It was something that, just didn't seem to make a lot of sense. But at the end of the day, it's worked out quite well for LA. And I do wonder, they've got Anaheim tomorrow night. I do wonder if both Doughty and Edmondson sit out again just to get these guys ready for the playoffs and give them the rest. Because, unless things get really, really tight and it's a game that they have to have. But I'm interested to see how the Kings manage the ice time, of both Edmonton and Doughty the rest of the way.
JD, with the way the Kings have played on home ice and with them controlling their own destiny to get home ice in round one, how much better are you feeling about them? And maybe the same can be said about, the way the Oilers have been limping down the stretch here, but how much better do you feel about LA beating the Oilers in a playoff series this year compared to other years where they haven't been able to get it done?
I would say, look, you can't discount the home ice, but I think regardless, I think this team, this Kings team, is better equipped to beat Edmonton, whether they were playing at start on the road or at home. Okay. I think the roster, it's a better roster than they've had. And, look, they've got the better goalie right now. I mean, you really couldn't say, last year when it was either Riddick and Talbot against Kemper, against Stuart Skinner, you could maybe call it a toss-up. The way Darcy Kemper has played this year, and even though his numbers on the road are not as good as they are at home, he's still been a far better goalie than Stuart Skinner throughout the year. So they've got the edge in the matchup there. You know, I think the blue line is better in Los Angeles. And really for Edmonton, it's a matter of, okay, so the guys that, you know, that haven't played, you know, what is Evander Kane going to be? You know, can he make an impact? That's one of the bigger questions for Edmonton coming into this series.
We're chatting with Jonathan Davis. He is our Pacific Division insider. He joins us Wednesdays here on Flames Talk. We take a spin around the Pacific, and the team that is in the driver's seat to win the division are the Vegas Golden Knights. How are they looking in your eyes as they try to lock up the number one seed in the division?
Well, they look good. I mean, you know, they sat Jack Eichel last night. They sat upper body injury. They sat Petrangelo last night. And, you know, I kind of, in watching that game against Colorado, I kind of got the impression that neither team wanted to get hurt. Like, they didn't want to have anybody deal with an injury. And it was very, very much, I thought, a very low-key game. But I think the rest of the way, that's, you know, I think Vegas is going to kind of manage things because, you know, they're comfortably in first place in the division. And now for them, the big question is Hurdle back on the ice, but, you know, let's see what happens. Let's see if he gets into a game before the playoffs start, you know, just like we're seeing Connor tonight. That's what I'm interested in seeing is will he get it? Will he get in?
And if, I mean, it sounds like the feel is that he'll be good for the playoffs though, right?
Let's put it this way. I haven't heard anything to say that he won't be good for the playoffs.
Okay.
So, you know, that's all I know right now. I haven't heard the opposite. I haven't necessarily heard that he's in, but I haven't, you know, or that he's out. I just haven't heard that he's out. That's really what it comes down to. But
he's been
there. Look, it's,
I was just going to say, yeah, Jamie, he's been so good for them this year. Like, I know that it was a bit of a surprise when they acquired him at last year's trade deadline or just before it, but boy, he has been outstanding in his first full season with the Golden Knights.
Yeah, I mean, when he came over, he was dealing, you know, he had been dealing with an injury in San Jose and finally healthy, and he has slot, you know, they were moving him back for a while between center and wing, but, you know, he's been playing center for quite some time, and it's been a really good fit. And, you know, look, again, you look at that team and where they are at the center position with Eichel and Hurdle and Carlson and Nick Waugh. I mean, that's four really good centers. And Bruce Cassidy has said on numerous occasions that line matching for them is really not something that he spends a lot of time on. So for them, if, you know, they get through the first round, they have to start potentially on the road somewhere. If that were ever to be the case, well, I guess that wouldn't be until the conference final. But he's not concerned about line matching. That's the bottom line. He feels that all four of his lines can play against any line on the opposing team. He's not interested in playing that game. Now we'll see what happens, you know, game seven of a series. But, you know, in theory, that's been his approach is what he has said on numerous occasions.
And maybe the last team we'll focus on, JD, is the Vancouver Canucks, just because, I mean, they did something no team has ever done before. And it's funny, when I didn't see it live. It was actually coworker Logan who texted me and goes, the Canucks just scored three times in the final minute of a game. And I go, oh, geez, I've never seen that before. And it's true. I'd never seen that before.
You never have.
It's right. Never happened before. First time ever, three goals scored in the final minute of a hockey game. And that happened against Dallas in Dallas. And they come back and also win it in overtime from 5-2 at the 19-minute mark to 6-5 a few minutes into overtime. Just bonkers. But they're not going to make the playoffs. As much as that extended their season and they weren't eliminated with that loss, they're not going to make the playoffs. I think we can be very, very certain of that. And it's been an extremely disappointing year for the Vancouver Canucks. What what does this group look like in your eyes going forward, and what are you watching for as they move into what feels like a very important summer for them?
Well, I think the big question is what happens with Elias Pettersson, the forward Elias Pettersson, not the defenseman. I mean, that's really, that to me is, you got to sort through that. Like, what are we going to do? Because, you can still trade him. I think he's got the no move until July 1st this year. So, sort that out. Once they sort that out, then we'll figure it out. And then the next question, and maybe even before, and the next question is Rick Tocchet. I know the Canucks have, they're not very happy with all this talk around their coach and the Philadelphia Flyers, but that's not Rick Tocchet's fault. And that's just, that's us in the media. It's not the Flyers. They didn't do anything. We in the media, and understandably so, have made that a talking point. So those are the two big things for me. And, Quinn Hughes is, 2 years from – 2 years from – free agency, if I remember correctly, Pat, 1 year away from being able to start talks on a new deal. I mean, that it hasn't come up yet, but for me, that's a topic of conversation that I'd want to address as well. I mean, I think that's something that you want to go into for me this off season, get some sort of sense that, hey, are we talking a contract a year from now or what? And because I don't know. I mean, as much as we're connecting the dots to Tocchet in Philadelphia, why shouldn't we be connecting the dots to Quinn Hughes and his brothers in New Jersey?
Yep. Yeah, Hughes has 2 years left. But just to confirm, 2 years left on his deal after this year. So next summer could start talking about an extension.
Right. So, I think that's something that you definitely want to get in front of if you're the Vancouver Canucks. And there's a lot going on. I mean, if you're going to have to find a new head coach, even though the Canucks, are saying they're going to exercise their option. I mean, if you've got a coach that says, look, I really don't want to be here, like, please, and I'm not saying that's the case, but that's just something that, you've got to kind of figure out, because even if you exercise the option, he's there for one more year. Do you really like that? What purpose does that serve anybody if you've got a coach that's, that is going to be gone a year later?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So, it's going to be a very interesting offseason in Vancouver. And it's unfortunate because of everything that they built up last season to go from one end of the spectrum to the other like that.
Yeah.
Is just crazy. It really is. I think that, we're talking next year and we're talking about, who's going to make it. I mean, right now, and I didn't think I would say this, I wouldn't have said this a year ago, but, a year from now, the team in your city is looking to be in a far better position than the Vancouver Canucks when you look at the prospect pool in Calgary and what's already playing for Calgary right now. No reason to think why you wouldn't include the Flames, the team that, could make the playoffs next year. We'll see what happens this year. But just saying, like, the trajectory of what's going on in Calgary, I think it's just, it's so different than what it was a year ago.
For sure.
Especially when you compare it to what's going on in Vancouver.
Yeah. And if Vancouver does end up saying goodbye to Elias Pettersson, then they don't even have that, because he was trending up until the last year and a half or so, he was trending as an elite number one center in this league, and obviously that narrative has taken a huge turn, and maybe EP40 can still figure it out, but then that takes away. Now you've got JT Miller gone, and potentially Elias Pettersson not as a number one center. You looked at it in Vancouver, said, "Geez, that is one of the best 1-2 punches in the NHL," and who knows if they even have one of them to start next year that they had to begin this year.
Well, right. And the other thing is that, look, if they end up moving PD somewhere, like, you're going to get 70 cents on the dollar,
yeah.
Which is already, you know, as I like to joke, it's, or really don't want to joke, but I mean, the dollar ain't very good right now. And, you know, and that's, unfortunately, that's 70 cents Canadian. And so, you know, it's just, it's not good. Like, it's just, you're not going to get the best player back. You know, you're hoping that you can, like I said, you're hoping that you're going to get something that's going to be serviceable. But anyone that's going to trade for him, you know, taking on that contract and his performance, I mean, you're going to have to, you have to bite the bullet on the return to some degree.
Yep. All right, JD, get out of here, man. We will talk to you next week. We'll have a much better idea as to how the Pacific Division is going to play out, and we'll be a day before Calgary and LA's final game of the regular season, and we'll find out how much that game means when we chat 1 week from today. For now, though, have a great rest of your week. Thank you, pal.
All right, you too. I appreciate it. Thanks for the time, as always.
Thank you, JD. Jonathan Davis is our Pacific Division insider. He joins us every Wednesday here on Flames Talk. He joins us from NHL Network and VSiN Sports, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. As we start to wrap things up this hour on the program, Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Shan and Cam have been our producers, and that'll do it for the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.